Hello, and welcome to Art from the Heart, a one-on-one interview podcast with well-known Cincinnati-based artists. We ask the questions people want to know about artists. What moves them? What is most important to them when they create their works? And what would they like their followers to think about when viewing their art? I'm Doug Sandage, and I've interviewed thousands of people during my 40-plus year career in journalism, including many artists. Today, we're talking with children's book illustrator and author Lauren Long. Lauren and his wife Tracy live in Madera, a suburb just north of Cincinnati. Lauren's illustration credits include a children's book for President Obama, Waddy Piper's The Little Engine That Could, Walt Whitman's When I Heard the Learned Astronomer, and a book with entertainer Madonna. In addition, Lauren has now authored and illustrated his own 8 books, titled after a tractor he affectionately names Otis. Lauren's works have been included dozens of times on the New York Times bestseller list, and he has also been a contributor to numerous magazines, including Sports Illustrated. This interview with Lauren was recorded just a week before he finished painting an oversized poster featuring 15 newborns found at the world-famous Cincinnati Zoo. We hope you enjoy, and thank you for listening. We're with Lauren Long today. Lauren, thanks a lot for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
Lauren, your commander-in-chief, President Obama, ordered you to design his own children's book of Thee I Sing, based upon a recommendation from his own kids. How'd that happen? Tell me a little bit about that.
That'll always be one of the most special honors of my career as a children's picture book author and illustrator. And really, it's like a lot of other things in my career. Apparently, the Obama family had some of my books. He had written the Of Thee I Sing, a letter to my daughters, to his daughters. My understanding is long before he was the president of the United States, and he wrote it as a father. President Obama's a best-selling author even before he became a president. And his publisher had that that children's book piece, that letter he wrote to his daughters, very inspiring letter. And they held on to it until 2010. And certainly I'm not knowledgeable about how the whole thing came together. All I can tell you is my piece of it is that the editor at Knopf, at Random House, knew my children's book work, and they submitted to President Obama and his, people that were helping him, they submitted it to basically the Obama family. Sasha and Malia and Mrs. Obama, they all together, this is what they've told me, they chose me out of the whatever number was of working children's illustrators in the publishing world today in America. And I think it was because, again, they had a couple of my books, and they felt like whatever I bring to the table was a good fit. So, very flattering, to say the least.
So did you ever think growing up in Lexington, Kentucky, that later on in your life you were going to be invited to the White House to shake the president's hand because you helped illustrate his book?
No, that never came to mind as I was growing up in Lexington. Even in college, not even knowing exactly what I would go on and do for a living. Never once did I think that would happen, and it was one of the most, it was a cool experience. I mean, just to get to go to the White House, and even when I did the art, didn't know if I would ever get to meet the president, But to be invited after the book published was just an amazing experience. And to meet President Obama and shake his hand and have him meet my two sons. And, you know, obviously you're meeting the leader of the free world in his office. But the coolest thing for me was it was almost, you know, and this sounds a little cheesy, but it was almost like I was just meeting a very important fellow dad. And that's how he treated my sons. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, and but he talked to my boys and flattered me in front of, complimented me in front of my sons, in front of some of the other Random House officials. And I thought, I was floating, and I thought, what a human thing to do for this. He didn't need to do that, but he complimented me in front of my two little boys. They were in middle school and freshmen in high school, and I thought, you know what, that was very special. I'll never forget it.
You've also done a book for Madonna. Also, you were selected to re-illustrate the one of the top children's books of all time, The Little Engine That Could.
Thank you.
Anyone ask you, what's next? Are you going to illustrate the Bible, Tolstoy's War and Peace? I could certainly use a little help from you, for sure. What's next? Okay, so you got the president, you got Madonna, you've got The Little Engine That Could. You've captured in a short time some of the classics and names. Yeah. You've done well.
Well, that's very sweet. Thank you. Yeah, and it just goes to show you, you know, I just wanted to publish stuff. I can still remember like it was yesterday. I just love somebody to print one of my pictures, you know, when I was at the University of Kentucky. There were no New York Times best-selling illustrators on my left or right, or, you know, it wasn't that environment that I came from. I just remember, after I graduated from UK, thinking, okay, now I want to be a national illustrator. I want to do the biggest work I can. But I needed a little more training, so I went to the American Academy of Art in Chicago. And I remember still sitting in those halls just wanting to do a picture that somebody would print. Because I knew at that time, I love art. I knew I had studied art history. I knew the world of art history. But at that point in time, I had zoned in on I want to be an illustrator. That means I want to publish, I want to make art that somebody publishes, that's printed in an advertisement or a magazine or a book or a theater poster or any poster. Or, you know, just that was sort of what gave me the itch and the bug, and it was a huge challenge because I wanted to do that for my life. I wanted to do that for a living, and I looked. You know, I grew up in a very conventional family environment where my friends in college were going to go to law school, medical school, business school, dental school, and they were all. I remember that feeling. Some of them I'm still in touch with, but I had this feeling at the end of my college years, like they're all going to leave me and I'm not even sure if I'm going to make it, you know, but I did know I really wanted it and nobody was going to help me with this one. There were no phone calls I could make. I didn't have any connections. So, but I had the desire, you know. I was very fortunate at the age of, you know, whatever, 21, to know what I wanted to do. Then it was just a matter of accepting that this is what I want to do. It may not turn out all that great. It may not turn out to, I may not, you know, I still have a question mark above floating above my head for years, you know. Other people know if I do this, this, and this, it's going to turn out. But something like illustration, or I guess any of the creative fields, musicians certainly, you know, music, theater, acting, those kinds of things, dancing, whatever, those dreams, athletics, you know. You never know if it's going to turn out. You never know if you're going to be able to afford to raise a family, that kind of thing. But I knew I wanted to do it.
Certainly, if those kind of questions, though, let's say in the facts straight, 9 of your books have been on the New York Times bestseller list, including your own book, Otis the Tractor, which was 17 weeks on the list. President Obama's Of Thee I Sing was number 1 for 11 consecutive weeks. I mean, for questions that you still have, haven't you really reached in most ways, and which obviously leads to the question, where do you go from there?
Well, I think it's a funny thing. I guess it's really cool to be a New York Times bestseller, and there's so many talented authors and illustrators that are just amazing, friends of mine. And they may have a whole career and not get on the New York Times list. It's a really cool thing. And it's something you strive for, but also it's not something that it's kind of fun. Okay, it's fun because, say, the first Otis book got on the New York Times list. Well, that was a real special moment for me because I'd been on the New York Times list with Waddy Piper's Little Engine That Could and Madonna's Mr. Peabody's Apples and Frank McCourt's Angela and the Baby Jesus and John Sheshka's Trucktown. And I had been on the New York Times list with, and you know, I would get on there with President Obama's book. But it was more special, obviously, to get on there with only one name there, Lauren Long. And I'll never forget that feeling. Otis, the first Otis, bumped on that New York Times list. And it really was more special because, like you said, it wasn't attached to an author of note. It was my own creation that came out of completely out of me and my family, and then every one of those Otis books, we did 5. Every one of them has reached the New York Times list. Now, I will say, we have this coming fall, 2016. We have Otis and the Kittens. The climate for children's publishing has changed even these last few years. Picture books seem to be booming. There are books that stay on that top 10 list. So if my 6th Otis does not get on the New York Times list, it'll be sort of a bummer. However, I'm not measuring. I think the biggest difference in my career now and my career when I started is that I'm a little older and, you know, I'm 50 now. And I'm a little, I dare say mature, but I don't measure myself as much by things like that, by awards, by lists. And those are all fine, but I, and measuring myself by the work I'm trying to do, and I'm trying very hard, unlike Lauren 10 years ago, to not compare myself. It's very hard, especially with the social media, and because you go on there and you see what everybody's doing, and you also see what everybody's talking about. You see who is talking about who, and it's right in your face. So my goal early on, and I told Tracy when I left editorial illustration, working for magazines and that kind of thing, and I remember telling her, I wonder if I could make a living just doing children's books, because that seems like a way to go. I can't handle these deadlines. They're, you know, I don't like doing a picture for a magazine in 2 days or 3 days, and I have friends that are great at doing that. But it wasn't good with my temperament. I love the marathon that is a picture book. I told her, Tracy, my wife, I just want to make a living doing something I love. Awards are wonderful. Great reviews are wonderful. The New York Times bestseller list is amazing. It's awesome to be looked at that way and talked about that way. But really, I wanted to just provide a living for myself and my family that lasted a long time. So that's my goal. And as I sit here today, I still, what gets my engines moving here is I want my best work to still be inside of me, you know, yeah. So, and I want to be able to say, I want to be able to talk to you, Doug, in 20 years, if we're both lucky enough to still be alive. And I want to tell you what book I'm working on. I want to be making a book in 20 years when I'm 70, you know.
Well, it's a level of satisfaction to what you do, as you mentioned prior. I'm trying to imagine, and I've not experienced this with you yet, but when you're in a bookstore and you're signing copies of your books, and you're looking at those parents' eyes who are buying perhaps the third oldest book or the fourth oldest book, what are they saying to you? Because I have to imagine the personal satisfaction from them eyeball to eyeball to you. They've told you that they love your book. That's a level of satisfaction. I can't think of a better return, so to speak, for what you do.
Yeah, Doug, thank you for even bringing that up. It is. It's they don't realize what they're saying to me, and they're being very sweet. But to meet someone in I live in Cincinnati, and to be on tour and meet somebody in Kansas or in Boston or down in Florida or Sacramento. They're a complete stranger, and their 3-year-old's favorite book is Otis. That's really what Otis has given. It's a gift to me. I've done now 4 or 5 years of only creating Otis, and in general, with the exception of Little Tree recently, and that is a wonderful thing because you have a built-in growing audience. The flip side of that is you're not doing anything in a way that the industry views as new, but it's a decision you make, and I will never regret that decision because there are a lot of people that have become Otis fans. And the cool thing about children's publishing is, and everybody that's in the industry knows this, but what's one kid's favorite book is not the favorite for the next kid or this parent or that, or that teacher or librarian. But there are a great deal of Otis fans, and they may just think they're meeting me at a signing and saying, this is my little 3 or 4-year-old. His favorite book is Otis, or Otis and the Puppy, or Otis and the Tornado. And they're just being sweet and telling me that at a signing. But for me, it just feeds my soul. It's like, I go home. I mean, that charges me. It validates every decision I've made in that, in my career. And I've heard of, there are a couple of dogs that have been named after Otis the Tractor. And one little young couple said that the first word out of their baby's mouth was Otis, and the dad was complaining because it wasn't Dada, those are things that carry me forever. And when I stop making Otis, it'll just be I don't know if it'll be this 6 books or whatever, but it'll be a very special part of my career. And who knows if I ever do another series. Because there is something fun about just doing the one book that stands alone, doing the next book that stands alone. But I'll always cherish and always appreciate the decision I made to do more than one book about the same character for those reasons.
You had mentioned that Otis prior that might be optioned as a TV show. Is that something you can talk about, or is it too early?
It's probably too early, but we're optioned for a television show. There's this amazing animation studio called Nine Story up in Canada. Even a studio in Dublin, Ireland by the name of Brown Bag Studio. And we're in the very beginning stages. And for me, it's just it's a real cool, fun thing that might be happening. You know, the goal is to make a television show that could be picked up by a you know, a wonderful network, and just share Otis. And the cool thing about Nine Story and Brown Bag is they get the heart of it. I've heard lots of stories about option for movie, option, you know, other authors and illustrators dealing with this kind of thing. And the cool thing about these people is they've spent time on the phone with me. They actually are listening to the heart of what I'm trying to do. And they're starting with that, and it's really fun. So whether, who knows, you know, if that'll work out. But right now it's been just a top-notch experience. And their heart's in the right place. And if it happens, it'll be this really cool, fun thing. If it doesn't happen, I just think it's kind of fun that we're trying, you know. We'll see. Knock on wood.
We're doing this interview in Madera, Ohio, and we're in Lauren's second floor studio, which, looking out, pretty much you see a great tall stand of various trees. And Madera, Ohio has been recognized as one of the best small towns in America. Lauren, you could have, I mean, with your credibility and your reputation, now you could be on the sunny beaches of California, you could be in Florida, you could be in a penthouse in New York. I mean, there's a lot of things that sometimes you go to where the action is, but you're in Madera. Well, what's that say about you?
Well, first of all, Tracy's here, right?
Good reason, number one.
There you go. What,
yeah. We can stop there.
All right, that's it. Make sure she hears this. Yeah. You know, I grew up down the road in Lexington. I guess we could have gone to some other neighborhoods. But this just felt like us, you know, Tracy and I, and we moved here in large part for, this little community that has a diversity of people, backgrounds and socioeconomic levels. And, it just sort of felt like Tracy and I and the schools, you know, largely for my two boys, to get to go to a middle school and a high school and be around the people that are here. And yeah, so that's it. And Tracy's family is in the Middletown area and Monroe area of Ohio. So my mother now lives in Madera with us, not in the neighborhood. And still have my brother and a brother in Lexington and a brother in Missouri. And yeah, so I like to travel and go see other places, and who knows, Tracy and I may divide time over time, but I'm, you know, at heart, I'm kind of a Midwestern guy. I don't like, I love that I publish in New York and my friends up there, and people are people. And, so I love that, and I love to visit, and, but at least right now in this stage of my life, yeah, I just kind of like the vibe and the feel here.
So you're comfortable.
Yeah, comfortable, yeah.
I understand you're doing a poster for the Cincinnati Zoo, and the Cincinnati Zoo is world-renowned for its population and propagation, I should say, of babies. And you were asked to do this poster to illustrate a number of the zoo babies that have been born there. Why did you do this? It's a deviation a bit from your books, from your greeting card past, from your other projects that you've done, but now you're going to have to capture a whole bunch of animals and put them onto a board and paint them and make them come to life. Why'd you do it?
I did it because I grew up in Lexington. And the zoo of my life is the Cincinnati Zoo. In other words, when I was a little child, we'd come up to Cincinnati, which you know, is a bigger city than Lexington. And so the first zoo I remember was the Cincinnati Zoo. And those are fond memories, right? That's when you're a little kid and everything's fun. Coming up to Reds games with my dad and my mom and my brothers. And going to the zoo. That was a big part of life. And then as a young person living in Cincinnati, you know, I remember Tracy and I going to the zoo for a date, you know. And then we had the two boys. And so then the zoo was a really even a bigger part of life. It's the fabric of life. But to answer your question, you know, there's a lot of places to put, you know, to volunteer and do art and for this or that. But that's an institution that I, it's like, that's one, I love animals, you know. And so that was hard. That was one I was like, okay, I can't pass that one up. That's just too big of an opportunity. And when I say opportunity, I don't even know. I don't know. But I just felt like that was an esteemed thing to do. I love animals. My family loves animals. And I just believe in what the zoo does, and especially the Cincinnati Zoo. And it's just one of these really free and open. They've been great to work with. They essentially gave me a list of 30 animals, and I could put any animal I wanted in to this poster. So it's kind of a picture maker's dream. And they're going to print this poster, 37 by 47 inches. So it's just a kind of a blast to make. And when I do my picture book work, I work about 12 inches by 25 inches on a double spread. So, and I work on illustration board or canvas. And it's just been a blast. I haven't worked in a large scale in a while. And I haven't really had given myself the time to just noodle detail into a face or to an eyeball or, and not to mention the fact that I've never painted a pato or I've never painted a sloth or I haven't painted that many giraffes in my life or gorillas and elephants, baby elephants. And I just felt like I could bring a certain, maybe it's crossing over from my children's publishing work, but I felt like I could bring a certain youthful exuberance and life in these animals to this poster.
The animals all just have a look of innocence in many ways. They're almost reaching out to be touched, to be held, to be appreciated. And you've done that through exaggerating a bit some of their characteristics, but it makes them feel they're lovable. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Was that your intent? Were you looking at that theme all the way along? And when you first started this, what was kind of going through your head?
Yeah, exactly. So, Doug, my work is in general rooted in realism, and but what I always want to bring to the table is my own sort of sensibility of drawing, and it's very handmade, and it's very I'm trying to get to the soul of things. And again, I hate to keep bringing up Otis, but I'm trying to get to the soul of that character. If I'm doing a book and there's an animal or a person, or, you know, I want to get to the essence of that. I want it to be approachable. I want it to be appealing. I want it to be adorable. I want it to again, it doesn't have to be perfect, but I want people to feel it. You know, I've told students, kids, this. I don't want you to look at my art. I want you to feel it. And I don't know. So I'm basing, I need to look at a photograph of a pato, just to use that as an example. P-O-T-T-O. And because I can't draw a pato, because I really don't, or a sloth, really, because I need to look and see. But so I may look at a photo reference for that, but I want to make sure my art doesn't look like that photo. I want it to transcend that on some level, and that comes, I think, from just the drawing, and you just draw it, you know, and you try to get to a certain essence or a certain, you scale down some of the detail and you try and get to the shape of that personality. And I know, again, these are sort of hard little flowery terms, but I want people to feel, I really do. When somebody looks at this Cincinnati Zoo poster, I want them to feel those animals, and I want them to feel the life of those animals.
Looking at the poster now, it evokes a sense of the animals saying, come see us, join us. Come to the Cincinnati Zoo, which is its purpose, is to draw people to zoo babies, and particularly the zoo, which is known for its propagation of newborns.
There's something about babies. There's something about zoo babies. There's something about a puppy, you know, and it is that innocence. And that's kind of the cutest thing about every species on the planet, you know, that wide-eyed innocence. And I was thinking about that, you know, when I painted the zebra and the little polar bear. And then, you know, and then again, the zoo folks, the Cincinnati Zoo people have been so gracious. And, you know, my original sketch didn't have a polar bear. And then I'm thinking, I got to get a polar bear. And here's one of my favorite things to see at the zoo, the Cincinnati Zoo in particular. But yeah, it is. I want them to reach out and say, yeah, come see me. I'm here waiting for you. Yeah.
A little bit earlier, you granted us the opportunity to see you paint an eye into one of the animals. What, and I would have to think that one of the most difficult things for an artist to capture is the look in an eye. That you feel like it's looking back at you when you are as a viewer. How hard is that? What's the challenge in painting a baby's eye in particular?
There's a certain softness, certain innocence, and yeah, it's hard to explain how you capture that. A lot of it, I always tell when I'm talking to elementary school children and I'm drawing for them. I like to think, you know, think about this. You smile with your face, right? And kids are like, oh, what do you smile with? You smile with your mouth. Well, no, yeah, you do smile with your mouth. But what else do you smile with? You smile with your nose. You smile with your ears. You smile with your body. You smile especially with your eyes. And they're like, yeah, okay. And then when the sun's shining, or a light hits you, your eyes sparkle. And those eyes smile, you know, they light up a room. And so when I'm painting particularly this zoo poster, making these little zoo babies, I'm thinking the sparkle in the eye. And I'm thinking of that wet, round eye with the highlight and the dark part of the eye, the dark pupil part of the eye, and how that highlight sings. And then underneath, there's a little bit of the light going through that eyeball. And again, I'm no John Singer Sargent. I'm no portrait painter. So many people, you know, I can't even, they're so talented that I'm not in that world, but I just know the simplicity of detail sometimes is better than all the detail, I guess, if you know, keeping it simple, you know. All these eyes, there's how many eyeballs on this poster? They're all looking at you with the same sense of innocence and brightness and excitement. And I want them all to you know, in my wildest imagination, I would hope that people would have a hard time deciding which one they like the best.
For all the people who go to the zoo and see the poster, what message do you want to leave them with? Is it buy this poster?
No. By the way, let's take it. I can say this. so easily. Let's take commerce out of this thing, right? I want you to say, love me. I want that thing to say, love me. I want them to see empathy, right? Nah, I know we can't solve the world of that, but you know what? That's the cool thing about an animal. If you're you could be from all walk of life. You could be in the inner city. You could be in the country. You know, but we react as human beings to animals, I think, the same way. A horse, for example. You look at, there's no horses on the zoo poster, but it's the common denominator, right? The way people respond to animals on some level, in my mind and in my, you know, my way of thinking, my philosophy is, tells so much about them. If anything, maybe this poster in some small way will, number one, will make people want to go to the Cincinnati Zoo, but also will want to love animals, learn about animals, and be kind to animals, no matter what animal.
Well, earlier today, you had the opportunity to actually meet face-to-face one of the newborn penguins. Actually, two of them, but one of them was named Bowie. Have you ever had that opportunity? I mean, you've been to the zoo many times. Did you ever actually get a chance to, up close and personal, to be with one of them?
No, absolutely not. We dug one time at one of the various fundraising charity events. My boys and I and Tracy did one of those little raffle auctions, and we got to go behind the scenes at the zoo. So we got to go with and do a mini tour with Thane Maynard, and that was a real highlight. It was I'll never forget that. But we didn't hold animals, and this was fun because we got to go with the penguin. The penguin keepers, I guess you'd say, and they shared with us, and we got to basically sit on the floor and watch these two little blue or little penguins, Bowie and his friend, basically waddle back and forth, and we got to pick them up and hold them, and it was really cool.
And Tracy and your son were there with you?
Tracy and one of my boys was there, and Bowie was the one that sort of was written up in the paper, so he's kind of famous, a famous Cincinnati Zoo penguin, baby penguin. The other one was pecking at us a little bit, and it was just really fun. We got to hang out. I did a couple sketches, and I'm hoping to be able to add him to the poster, the painting in progress. Sort of as a tribute to Bowie the penguin. Because I feel like we're friends now. I did hold him.
When I look at you, Lauren, I see a big kid. Are you okay with that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a compliment, right? Yeah. Yeah, I hope it'll always be that way. Yeah.
Even more so help you relate to everything that you do because you can see things. Your art is to reach parents and their children, but the children is the essence of what you do. So if you're one of them, does it help you even more so? When you paint, are you feeling that? Are you going back to your youth a little bit, maybe, in a way that brings that out of you?
I think so, yeah. And I wouldn't even pretend to say that I do it unlike so much anybody else, you know? I mean, obviously, there's an emotional component to my work that maybe someone else doesn't have in their work line of work. So I understand that. I'm very fortunate that I get to do something that, at least in my mind, is has a nice place in the world. And so I don't really want to make it sound like it's some major important thing. Like so many people are doing, and but it does. I suppose, and even as I get older, it's more important to me, and that is just the human empathy piece of life, and caring about other people. And when you're a child, there's so many facets of that and so many layers of that human empathy between children and other children, between children and adults. And I like that, in a way, what my life's work is hopefully feeding something good toward that. And that's what I've done with Otis. You know, I feel like there was one of the greatest it was through Twitter, believe it or not, a teacher reached out to me directly and said, "We love Otis, we're studying Otis." And it was a first grade teacher, and she said, "We like to ask ourselves, what would Otis do?" And I thought that was the most rewarding thing somebody could say to me. Because it's like, you know, that's that empathy thing. Because Otis cares about everyone. He's more concerned about his animal friends than he is himself. And I thought, man, to have she was from North Carolina, total stranger, and she said, "We ask, what would Otis do?" Think about the little six-year-old saying, wait, what would Otis do? And thinking about that, you know, I love that.
If you could tell parents one thing about parenting based upon the reactions that you get after they've read your books, what would it be?
Oh, man. Well, we're getting into life philosophy here, aren't we? Oh, I don't know how it relates to my books or whatever, but I would just say love your kids and don't compete. Don't compete. You know, your children, your life is not a competition. There's too much competition in the world. It's the constant competition. And don't make a competition out of those little lives. Don't expect them to be like what you wanted to be. Don't expect them to, you know, now here I am talking, you know, getting up on my soapbox. But yeah, do not expect them to be what you want them to be so much. Let them be what they are. Let them, encourage them, teach them, work with them, but don't use them as a thing to brag about or to be jealous about, you know. Let them strive. I think especially today's social network, we're all so quick to talk about how amazing our kids are. You know, most kids are not amazing, you know, but doesn't mean, I'm sorry to break that news, but most kids are good. Let them be good. Let them contribute the way they can. And I'm sorry if I'm too young to start espousing life philosophy like that. I should be an 80-year-old man saying that kind of stuff. But you know what I mean? Do you get what I'm saying there? So anyway, it's not easy to do, but yeah, that's my thought.
Well, thank you, Lauren, very much. It's appreciated, as always, to spend time with you and to learn of your newest endeavors and what you've done so far to make it all a better world. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doug, and I appreciate your support in my work and also your part that you've played in the making the Cincinnati Zoo poster possible for me to take part in. Thanks.